Once upon a time, there was a king and a queen who lived in what is today northern India. They had a baby prince whom they named Siddhartha. The king and queen gave Siddhartha everything a child could possibly want. They made certain that their son never saw unhappiness. So as a child and youth, the royal prince thought the world was only a happy place. Siddhartha grew into a man. He married. He was happy. He was also curious. He had never been outside the palace compound. True, it was a very large palace with extensive gardens, but Siddhartha wanted to know what was beyond that wall. So he left the palace one day with his friend Chana to explore the kingdom. At first, Siddhartha was happy wandering about, seeing the sights. But then he saw three things that changed his world forever. First, he saw a very old person. The person had wrinkled skin and walked slowly with a cane and seemed confused, wandering about like a little child. Siddhartha asked Chana, "What is this?" Chana replied, "This is old age, master. It comes to all of us if we live long enough." Soon after this, Siddhartha came upon a second startling sight. A person was lying on a mat on the ground. The person was very hot, writhing in body and groaning like an animal, with sounds that pierced Siddhartha's heart. Siddhartha asked Chana, "What is this?" Chana replied, "This is sickness, master. It comes to all of us at least once in our lifetime." Soon Siddhartha came upon a third startling sight. He saw a group of people carrying a human body that did not move. The body looked like it was stone. It was cold. It was hard. And the people were weeping. Siddhartha asked Chana, "What is this?" Chana replied, "It is death, master. It comes to all of us." Siddhartha had never seen these things before. Now he knew about suffering. He was no longer content to live in the royal palace. He left the comforts of being a royal prince and became a pilgrim. He found spiritual teachers. He listened to them and became an ascetic. He ate very little, practiced austerities all day long, wandered about without a home. After 6 years, he was so famished, he lay down to die. A young girl brought him some food and revived him. Siddhartha decided to sit underneath a tree. He would not leave that place until he understood the cause of suffering and the healing of suffering. He fell into a deep state of meditation. While sitting, there were great storms with thunder, lightning, and rain. He continued to sit quietly. Beautiful women invited him to tea, and angry men threatened to harm him. He continued to sit quietly. He encountered his deepest fears and his deepest desires, and he continued to sit quietly. Then he woke up. As the earth was his witness, he woke up from the illusion of being a separate ego. A peace deeper than fear or craving filled him, a harmony deeper than illness, aging, and death. He had become the Buddha, the one who woke up. We turn now to the life of the Dalai Lama. We begin with an excerpt from his book, How to Practice, the Way to a Meaningful Life. There are two ways to create happiness. The first is external, by obtaining better shelter, better clothes, and better friends, we can find a certain measure of happiness and satisfaction. The second is through mental development, which yields inner happiness. However, these two approaches are not equally viable. External happiness cannot last long without its counterpart. If something is lacking in your perspective, if something is missing in your heart, then despite the most luxurious surroundings, you cannot be happy. However, if you have peace of mind, you can find happiness under the most difficult circumstances. The harmony and friendship that we need in our families, nations, and the world can only be achieved through compassion and kindness. Fighting, cheating, and bullying have trapped us in our present situation. Now we need training in new practices to find a way out. It may seem impractical, but we have no alternative to compassion, recognizing human value and the oneness of humanity. This is the only way to achieve lasting happiness. The Dalai Lama is from the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. We will listen now to a mantra, a chant from Tibetan Buddhism, the Vajra Guru Mantra, which invokes, by tradition, the broadest insights of Buddhism, chanted by a Tibetan Buddhist Rinpoche.
Mother.
The Dalai Lama was born in 1935 in Tibet. He is believed to be the reincarnation of the previous Dalai Lamas, the first having been born in 1351, Common Era. When the 13th Dalai Lama died, a search party was organized to find the 14th. The holiest, most venerated monks were chosen for this task. They received a series of visions which led them to rural Tibet, to a small house on a plateau. And there they found a 3-year-old boy. They showed him items which belonged to the previous Dalai Lama and items which did not. The 3-year-old correctly identified each item by saying, "It is mine." In the winter of 1940, the boy was taken to Lhasa, where he was officially installed as the leader of Tibet. And for the next decade, he studied earnestly under the finest scholars and monks of the tradition. Then in 1950, when the Dalai Lama was 15, news reached Lhasa that communist China had invaded Tibet. This event, coupled with propitious oracles, led to the Dalai Lama being given his full authority as spiritual leader of the 6 million Tibetan people. During the next 9 years, the Dalai Lama tried, without success, to prevent a takeover of Tibet by the Chinese government. In 1959, it appeared that the Chinese were going to arrest him. A huge crowd gathered in front of the Potala Palace to protect him. The Dalai Lama, disguised as a common foot soldier, slipped past the massive throng and past the Chinese army. He escaped to India. The Indian government provided asylum for the Dalai Lama and his followers. In Dharamsala, India, a Tibetan government in exile was formed. Meanwhile, inside Tibet, the Chinese systematically occupied the country. 6,000 Buddhist monasteries were destroyed. A major population transfer was enacted so that today there are more ethnic Chinese living in Tibet than ethnic Tibetans. Chinese is now the official language of Tibet. It has been nearly 50 years since the Dalai Lama left his homeland. He has traveled widely, speaking and advocating for the Tibetan people. In a recent speech, he said, "During the past 4 decades since my escape, Tibet has been under the harsh control of the government of the People's Republic of China. The immense destruction and human suffering inflicted on the people of Tibet are today well known. I have led the Tibetan freedom struggle in a path of nonviolence and have consistently sought a mutually agreeable solution through negotiations." So this is a brief biography of the life of the Dalai Lama, who appeared recently, a few years ago, at Patriot Place Stadium wearing a Patriots hat. He has a wonderful sense of humor and ability to connect with people of every culture. So now we move on to an equally brief summary of his essential teachings. The Dalai Lama is a Buddhist in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. The core of his teachings center on compassion, loving kindness, and mindfulness. Of course, his teachings to Buddhists who are practicing is much different than his teachings to folks who are not Buddhists. We get Buddhism light. He is a really high scholar when he's talking to his own tradition. So the Dalai Lama writes, "Generally speaking, in Buddhist tradition, compassion and loving kindness are seen as two sides of the same thing. Compassion is said to be the empathetic wish that aspires to see the object of compassion, the sentient being, free from suffering. Loving kindness is the aspiration that wishes happiness upon others. Now, when the Dalai Lama is speaking about compassion and loving kindness, it's not just for your friends. It's for everyone, including the president. He writes, "True compassion and love is based on the simple recognition that others, just like myself, naturally aspire to be happy and to overcome suffering. In universal compassion, there is no element of prejudice, no element of discrimination. This compassion is able to be extended to all sentient beings. Thus, the essential feature of true compassion is that it is universal and not discriminatory." Same thing Dr. King taught during the Civil Rights Movement. So how do we cultivate this compassion and love? Because the hopeful promise of Buddhism is you can practice and become better at it. So to practicing Buddhists, the Dalai Lama will speak about the Eightfold Path of Buddhism. To non-Buddhists, he focuses on training our mind. I can't tell you how many teachers of different traditions have said to me, if you can't quiet your mind, you're not going to go deep into mysticism. You have to learn how to quiet your mind. So he focuses on training the mind. How do we train how we think? How do we train how we respond in our thinking? The Dalai Lama writes, "One could say that the real enemy is the enemy within, mental and emotional defilements. It is these that give rise to pain and suffering." This is the great challenge. It's not the cold that half this congregation has had that's causing the suffering. It's our response to the cold that causes the suffering. Applying antidotes lies at the heart of the practice. For example, to counter hatred, you can cultivate love. Okay, so Dr. King would say, there's Bull Connors. You stand up for justice and you still love the man. To counter attachment to an object, you can cultivate thoughts about the impurity of that object. Anything you're obsessing about, just think about all the other sides that are not so great about that object, and it might help you let go of it. To counter one's arrogance, you need to reflect upon shortcomings in you that give rise to humility. Now this, in sort of modern lingo, is being called mindfulness. Being aware of what's happening in your mind, in your thoughts, in your feelings, in the world around you. So by being mindful, you can see what choices you have you can make. Because if you're not mindful, you make the same habitual choices you've been trained to make. So you can replace a thought of jealousy with a thought of gratitude, which was essentially the lesson at the 10 o'clock service today. And the kids got it. If Monkey's upset that Anna can play the violin, Monkey ought to say, "Nice job, Anna," and the monkey can be happy doing something else, right? You replace the thought that's negative with another thought that's more humanizing. You can release a feeling of worry by being aware you're worried, relaxing your body a bit, and gaining some more equanimity in the moment. Now, all of this is easier said than done. We all know that. That's why it's a lifetime of practice. You practice and you practice, and every day you get a little better at it. So you can see the difference over 5 years and 10 years. Training the mind to turn towards compassion and loving kindness. That's the essence of it. Training the mind to turn away from our worry, our resentment, towards compassion and loving kindness. Now, many people criticize the Dalai Lama as being impractical when he writes, "Today we are so interdependent that the concept of war has become outdated. When we face problems or disagreements today, we have to arrive at solutions through dialogue. We must work to resolve conflicts in the spirit of reconciliation and always keep in mind the interests of others. Nonviolence is the appropriate method. Nonviolence does not mean we remain indifferent to the problem. On the contrary, it is important to be fully engaged. Nonviolence is not merely the absence of violence, it involves a sense of compassion and caring." Of course, in the real world, Tibet is still occupied by the People's Republic of China, which now has something like 9 million ethnic Chinese living in Tibet compared to the 6 million Tibetans. That's the reality. So how does the Dalai Lama deal with that after 50 years? He says, "I'm taking a long-range view, that these values I'm advocating may take the human family generations to learn, to fully practice." But the point is, if we're having trouble staying positive right now after a month, he's been positive for 50 years. Now finally, it's important in any discussion of Buddhism to mention transience, because it's at the center of the Buddhist tradition. I once had a friend give me a large Buddhist sculpting, and I put it on my wall. It took me about a month to finally get it, that there was this huge figure in the middle, and all these, you know, like parts of human life, happy, sad, all around, and the figure in the middle was eating all of it, because it was a mandala of transience. The Dalai Lama writes, "We must recognize that we shall all inevitably die. From the moment of our birth, we are approaching this inevitable demise. Death does not wait for us to tidy up our life. At the time of death, friends and family, and the precious possessions we have so meticulously collected through our lives are of no value. Not even this precious body, the vehicle of this lifetime, is of any use. When we can fully embrace the reality of death, then we can begin to realize the great opportunity and potential that our brief life affords us." So compassion, loving kindness, mindfulness, so we can train our mind and make different choices, and the emotional acceptance of death and transience. These are the core teachings of the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama understands himself as a servant. He is fond of quoting this traditional Buddhist text, "For as long as space endures, for as long as living beings remain, until then may I too abide to dispel the misery of the world." Like the Buddha centuries before him, the Dalai Lama has remained in the world to help free humanity from its suffering. I invite you now to join in a time of meditation on the theme of mindfulness and loving kindness. We'll take a moment of quiet, and I'll lead you through a guided meditation. Meditation on mindfulness and loving kindness. Just be aware of yourself breathing. This was the first meditation the Buddha taught. Just be aware of yourself breathing. Feel your breath move in and out of your body. And as you're mindful of your breath, you have a choice. You can be indifferent to it, you can be irritated with it, or you can embrace your breath with loving kindness. Embrace your breathing with loving kindness. And the same is true of our body. Feel the tingling of life in your body, from your feet, through your trunk, your hands, to your head. Feel yourself sitting in the chair or pew. Be aware of your body. And in this mindfulness, you have a choice of indifference, irritation, or loving kindness. Embrace your body with loving kindness. And now be aware of any thoughts or feelings. Thoughts and feelings that randomly come in and out of your awareness. The content of our mind. And with our mind, we can be indifferent. We can be irritated with our thoughts or feelings, or we can embrace them with loving kindness. Embrace your thoughts and feelings with loving kindness. And now expand your awareness to all the other human beings in this room, all the sentient beings in this room at this moment, who all know joy and suffering just like you do, your brothers and sisters. Be mindful of their presence as you're mindful of your presence. And in this mindfulness of community, we have a choice. We can be indifferent, we can be irritated, or we can embrace it with loving kindness. And let that loving kindness now expand to all humanity, and all the animals, and all the plants. Mindfulness, being aware of what's happening so we can make choices, so we can choose compassion and loving kindness.
Oh.
So here we are in 2017 in America. Our sisters and brothers in immigrant communities are terrified. Families being ripped apart. Muslims wondering if they can travel back and forth to this country. But we turn our back on the Paris Agreement of global climate change. Is CNN the enemy? All this and more. And the good news is that millions of Americans are having a voice and speaking out. But we must not let ourselves fall prey to despair or cynicism, or just become another angry opposition. So this month we've explored three lives who gave us a demonstration how to do that. Pablo Neruda, who risked his life, had to flee his country for social justice, but still wrote these odes of just joy of life. And our Unitarian ancestor, Mary Ann Evans, George Eliot, who bravely withstood rigid social convention to live the life she knew she was called to live. And today the Dalai Lama, who has endured 50 years of his people under oppression without becoming bitter or resentful and continuing the struggle. So that's the whole point of these three weeks. Let's love life. Let's be grateful and love life so we can be the best social justice activists we can be for the long run.